Hey, this is Paul Wilson of Karate Cafe. I'm not really a leading martial arts podcast figure, respected the world over for my opinion. But I do play one on the internet, and when I'm not doing that, I listen to Practical Defense. And now, so are you.
Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. This is episode 193, and I am your host, Alex Addix. We have a great discussion this week with Gail Pepin on the subject of gals, guns, training, and competition. We'll get to that in just a moment. I wanted to call out our good friends over at the Gun Dudes podcast, who are also a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network. If you haven't had a chance to check out their show, I highly recommend it. They are a great group of guys. They have a great show, and if you listen hard enough, you might even pick up a smidgen of wisdom. And even if you don't, they're still worth a listen. Also, the Gun Rights Radio Network now has an exclusive channel on Stitcher.com. Stitcher is a mobile content provider with apps for mobile devices that stream content and channels right to you. They have apps for all the major devices like iOS, Android, BlackBerry, and even Palm. The apps and accounts are free. Stitcher makes their money from advertising, so check it out. They also have a lot of great content in addition to the GRN shows. They have programming from ABC, CBS, Discovery Channel, Fox News, MSNBC, National Geographic, The New Yorker, Newsweek, and the list goes on. Yep, that's right. The Gun Rights Radio Network is playing with the big boys now. Now, of course, none of this would have happened without the expert navigation of our fearless leader, Mark Vanderberg. Thanks, Mark. And with that, we'll jump right into our discussion with Gail Pepin.
The legal aftermath of using a gun in self-defense can be traumatic and expensive. Get help and peace of mind through the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. Network members receive much-needed financial and legal support right after a self-defense incident. They also receive education in the form of DVDs from some of the top names in the business, along with having access to a nationwide pool of attorneys. Learn about membership at www.armedcitizensnetwork.org.
Welcome back. Now, this week, our guest is Gail Pepin. Now, Gail's been on the show before. She and I did the cooperative interview with Graciela, and today we're asking her to talk about firearms and women in firearms. Now, Gail is an expert in firearms. She is the Florida Georgia regional champion. She's also the Polite Society match champion for
2009.
Okay, excellent. 2 years. And she's also on the Alabama Holster women's team. She shoots IDPA and GSSF. So, you know, thanks for coming on.
Hi, Alex. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. Good to talk to you again. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been way too long.
We've both
been really, really busy, and you've been doing a lot of traveling.
Yeah.
I also forgot to plug your podcast.
Oh.
Gail is one of the co-hosts of the Pro Arms podcast, which is also on the Gun Rights Radio Network. And she does that show with Masada Yub and John and Terry Strayer and Steve Denny and Herman Gunter. Is it Gunter or Gunter?
Gunter. You got it right.
And Chris Christian.
Yeah. And Mike Larney. And we have a new member who's going to be on there, hopefully, a little more often, Bill File, who is a retired Florida law enforcement officer and an armorer in multiple guns.
Wow.
And a Civil War reenactor. So it's kind of, he's got a lot to offer us in the podcast.
I think the Pro Arms team has one of the largest groups doing the show of anybody on Gun Rights Radio Network.
I think we do. But the thing is, we can never get them all together. So we'll do a podcast no matter how many we get together. You know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8.
And a bunch of them recently have just been you.
It has been. You know, we've been traveling so much this year, we haven't been home. We have not been able to get the group together. Actually, we did a roundtable on the 4th of July, and I haven't even had a chance to post it yet.
Ugh.
That was back here. That was kind of Bill's inaugural episode with us. So We talk about his Civil War reenacting and his flintlock rifle, and just kind of catching up with everybody. I actually have that up soon. It's kind of just fun.
Well, I mean, if you wait much longer, it's going to be his first anniversary episode as well.
I'm trying. Most recently, I got up all the segments from the Gun Rights Policy Conference we had in September. So I know Mark Vandenberg had it on his site. You can listen to it in its entirety, but I broke it down into separate episodes. You can hear each group of speakers as a separate podcast. So that's what I've been doing.
Also, you've been on the cover of the Tactical Journal, the official magazine of the IDPA as well.
Oh, I was.
I see that they got your good side.
Yes, they did. They got my backside.
Well, back of the head. How about that?
Yeah, back of the head.
No,
That's my favorite part.
It's a great action shot of Gail doing the competition. She's sitting. You're sitting in like, it's an odd combination. They've got you like, it looks like it's an airplane chair, but there's a car door and you're leaning to the side.
It's kind of a hybrid airplane car kind of thing. I think it was supposed to be an airplane, but
cool.
You know, they worked with what they've got. So that's what they had. And I didn't even know they took the picture. I didn't know it was going to be on the cover until it came out, which is kind of fun.
Yeah. You look pretty focused and the slide is back and you know, it's a very, very nice cover.
Thanks, Alex.
So let's jump into the topic. And
okay.
Gals and guns.
Gals and guns.
I know there are a lot of women that are... the past couple of episodes, I've been talking on a lot about different options. And firearms for women are an option. But there's a lot of... It seems like there's a lot of resistance there. They seem far more likely to use a taser. But I didn't want to discount firearms. They are something that you can do if you're comfortable with it. So what I'd like to do is try and use your experience and your expertise as a competition shooter and with all of your experiences and introduce firearms to women. So why is there such a resistance, do you think, to firearms? Is it noise? Is it just a manly thing? Or is it something else?
I think it's all of that. I think it's cultural. You know, when we're little kids, the boys are playing cops and robbers, cowboys and Indians are playing guns, and the girls are playing Barbie or whatever. And males grow up thinking that is part of what males do, and women just don't. And I think the noise also is, like you said, a big part of it. And fear of the unknown, if they're not familiar with it, they don't know. They don't know if it's going to hurt, if it's going to kick, how loud it's going to be. There's an element of fear there, I think, with some women. I had a woman recently in a basic CCW class. She had a little revolver, I think it was. And she says, if this gun's really loud and it kicks, I'm going to drop it. And I said, oh, no, you're not. And we went from there. And she didn't. She got through it. But she was just afraid of how it was going to feel and how it was going to sound. And... You know, that's not all women, but that's some. You know, I shoot with a lot of women. I'm on a women's team, and you know, I don't see that with those women. So I think part of it is just acculturation and familiarity, I guess.
Yeah, for the women in my family, it was never an issue. My father is a Marine, so we grew up with firearms. I think I mentioned this before on the show, but I think I received my first rifle when I was 4.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister's... Got them at the same time. Whatever I got, my sisters got as well. So they grew up and they competed with me, and we used to, you know, go to the gun range together, and we'd all be lined up. My dad would have his lane, and I'd have my lane, and my sisters would have their lanes, and people would look very strange at the two little girls firing, and more accurately than they were.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, your father, that was normal for your family. We need to normalize guns for women, which we don't do. Most women don't grow up in families like that. Most women grow up in urban environments. They don't have any exposure to firearms. They don't have any opportunity to shoot. And it's just unfamiliar. We need to normalize it. We need to make it so it's not such a foreign thing to women. And then they pick it right up because, you know, when we teach women how to shoot, they learn faster than the men, you know, on the whole. I think it's because that males have the expectation that they just know how to shoot. And for women, it's brand new, and they just want to learn about it. They want to soak it all in. And I think you learn much more faster when you're like an empty sponge rather than you come with a preconceived notion that, oh, I know how to do this. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. It's very Bruce Lee. Empty cup.
Yes. Yes, empty cup. See, I didn't want to say this. That's why I said sponge instead. Well, I thought, you know, learning like a sponge, sucking up the knowledge, which men just don't do. They don't empty that cup. They're out there with something to prove. They say, I know this. You know, it's in their genes. They come out of the womb knowing how to shoot. And women just don't think that way.
Let's talk about, before we move on to the training aspects.
Okay.
Why you carry? I mean, why is firearm protection important to you? I know there are lots of strengths to firearms versus other defensive items.
It's important to me because if I were to get into a situation, I'm my own first responder. There's nobody there who's going to help me. You know, the police are there, but you have to call them and they have to get there. If something were to happen, it would be right here, right now. You had to react on the spot. You have to think fast. You have to act fast, or else you're just going to be a victim. And that's why it's important to me that I carry it. I think most women should carry it because they need to protect themselves. They need to take responsibility for their own protection. You know, the police aren't there to save you. The government's not there to save you. You have to save yourself. And that's why I choose to carry, and that's why I think most of the women I know choose to carry. They want to take that personal responsibility. It's empowering.
Now, a lot of the things I hear also is that, well, I don't want to hurt him. I just want him to stop. And a gun's a little bit too strong.
Well, if you just hurt him, you might just make him angry. And he might come at you even harder and stronger. So you want him to stop. How are you going to make him stop? I mean, you use pepper spray to make him stop? That might make him stop. It might backfire. It might get in your face. I mean, it's an option, but I don't think it's the best option. A taser or a stun gun. A stun gun is useless. A taser, yeah, but, you know, it's got to be kind of close. It's got to hit him just right. It's not a guaranteed stop. There have been cases of people riding through the police taser and coming back and killing the policeman. So a taser is not a do-all, end-all. The gun is your best chance of making him stop permanently and letting you get away safely.
And I think an important point also is that women and most men as well don't understand the disparity of force when it comes to the strength difference between a man and a woman. I know it's not a lot of PC that we don't want to talk about. And it's like, well, women are just as strong as men. Absolutely. Emotionally, spiritually,
right?
But not physically.
No, not physically. Most women are smaller than men. I mean, that's a known fact. And most women have less upper body strength than men. And, you know, there are strong women out there. But, you know, just on the whole, men are going to be bigger and stronger. It's just a fact. You know, we might all be equal, but they are going to be bigger and stronger guys out there. And you get some guy who's intent on harming you, doing, you know, who knows what. He might be on drugs or, you know, all hopped up on something. How are you gonna deal with that if you don't have anything to equalize the force?
It's, I think it was a marketing campaign for Colt firearms. God made man, Colonel Colt made them equal.
Yeah, that's true. It was. And that's the truth. And a woman with a firearm is more equal to a man who's out to harm her. You know, I would hate to have somebody, you know, get murdered or you know, raped or whatever because they had no means to protect themselves. And, you know, there's a certain type of person that, you know, you're talking about the just don't want to hurt them, just want to stop them. There's a certain kind of person that won't take responsibility. And, you know, those people are victims. And you're not going to change that kind of a person's mind. But that kind of person's not going to come to you for your martial arts training or for us for our pistol training. So I don't think that you're going to run into them. But there is a faction out there who would rather die than defend themselves. And you can't help them.
So if somebody wants to come now, a woman never even held a real firearm before, much, you know, probably just a squirt gun or something.
Uh-huh.
What is the best approach to get an introduction to firearms?
Well, what I would do and what I've done with friends who have been in that situation, I start them out with something small, like a 22. I have a Ruger 22-45, which I think is the perfect gun, in my opinion, to start somebody shooting with. It's got similar functions to a regular 1911 type 45, the same kind of grip angle, but it's a 22, and it's just, you know, it's a heavy metal gun, so there's what little recoil a 22 has is totally soaked up in it, and it's just fun, and it's not real loud. And then after that, I would move them up to a 9mm and then see where it goes from there. They might be happy with the 9mm, and there's nothing wrong with that. That might be what they decide on. They might decide on a 45, and there's nothing wrong with that either. But I would start out slow and low and let them get a little familiar, get over the fear if they're afraid, and then move up from there.
Yeah, I completely agree. When you're starting out brand new with firearms, you need to start with the small caliber. And man, if you're trying to get your sister, your girlfriend, your mother involved in firearms, don't break out your compact 45. They're not going to be able to control that. It's way too much. Start them small. Get them interested. Get them, make it fun. You don't want to start them heavy with what you carry. You want to start them with something that they can handle. So take it way, 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 way down. I think that's excellent advice.
And don't go with that little, you know, air weight revolver that you keep in your pocket, because those little babies are hard to shoot, and they'll beat her hand up, and she won't like it. You know, you got to make her like it. If it hurts her hand, if it hurts her ear, she's not going to like it. So start with that little gun, and then move up.
And the first shot matters. If the first shot scares them enough, they'll never pull the trigger again.
Oh, that's for sure. That is for sure. And, you know, all those men on YouTube who think they're so funny, who give their wives big guns and watch them out of control, don't be that guy.
Say you don't have somebody to introduce you to it. Say you're on your own. You don't have any friends that own firearms, but you're still interested. How would you go about finding a trainer or selecting a trainer?
Well, I would go to my local range. Everybody's got a range within an hour of them, I would think, you know, unless you live in a really remote area. Find that local range, and there's usually signs and flyers for trainers. Talk to the people behind the counter. See who they know. See if they have somebody who trains there at that range. Ask if they have a female trainer. I've gone to places, and I've had them on the podcast, where I've just, you know, walked in and found women teaching hundreds of women, you know, and nobody knows about it. So if you don't know about it, if you don't ask, you won't know. So I would ask at a local range or a local club. You know, you're going to find people are really nice, and people really want to help you, and they really want to help you learn. So I don't think that should be a problem. Get on the internet. That's another fine way to find somebody. You know, there's a lot of noise out there, but if you can sift through the noise, there's a lot of good trainers out there. If you don't feel comfortable shooting with men, look for a women's program. There's lots of women's training, as you can find on the internet, traveling trainers who go from, you know, state to state and teach women. So that's a couple of ways. It's a couple of options to find your way, to find a trainer, to find something.
And you'd recommend going to a range rather than a gun store?
Well, a gun store too. But I was thinking a range because they've got the range like there. They probably have somebody who trains people right there at their range. That's why I said that. But a gun store would be fine too.
Okay. Yeah, because I've heard a lot of different people disparage people that work in gun stores because they don't necessarily know as much as they think they know.
Well, you still, just like the internet, you have to sift through to get, you know, the good information. I mean, some gun stores are excellent and some gun stores are not. You know, if you come down here to Live Oak and walk into Pro Arms and talk to Steve and you ask his opinion, you're going to get some really good opinions and you're going to be there for an hour or so talking to him. But you go into some gun stores, yeah, you know, who knows what kind of crazy stuff they're going to tell you.
And you might even bump into you at that store.
Sometimes, if I'm around. So you just don't know about the stores. You just have to, you know, be out there and decide for yourself. And when you get online, you can, you know, if they give you the name of a trainer, you can Google search them and see what people have said about them. You know, take everything on there with a grain of salt, because there's going to be some people raving and some people, you know, just flaming. But, you know, sift through that and figure out what they're really saying and what really is the truth for you.
So let's fast forward a bit. So you've had training. You now carry. And one of the biggest complaints I hear from women is when I tell them that they need to carry on the body is like, well, that, you know, I can't wear my cute outfit that way because I can't hide and conceal the firearm.
Yeah, I see that a lot. We have a real big problem with the young girls and the cute outfit thing. And, you know, I see that all the time. They say, how can I, you know, they dress with nice little cute clothes. There's nothing wrong with that. Then you need to find an alternative way to carry. If you don't want to have it on your hip and have, like, some kind of little blouse or something over it, you can carry on your ankle. You know, if you have long pants on, ankle carry is, if you have a small gun, which you would need for ankle carry, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Some women carry in their purse. It's not my preferred method.
Oh, and I agree.
Many reasons.
let's explore some of those, because I really do not like purse carry. I don't like off the body carry in general. My biggest thing about it is that the purse is the target for theft. A woman's purse is the target, and say, well, if I keep my gun in there, they won't. No, they don't know there's a gun in there. They just know that that's where the money is where the keys are.
Right.
And if they find a gun, it's a bonus for them and it's bad for you. So I'm very against carrying in the purse.
Yeah, we just did a podcast about purse carry with Kathy Jackson and myself. And
has it published yet still in the hopper?
No, that one's been published.
Okay.
But with the big disclaimer at the beginning, you know, this is not the way we would like to do it. But if this is what you're going to do, this is how to do it safely. I mean, because some women will just want to do it that way. So if that's what they're going to do, they need to do it in the safest way possible for them. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes if you're not wearing long pants and you're wearing some little top, it's going to be hard to conceal. There's a little bra holster out there called the Flashbang, which would work with a really small gun again. And, you know, you have to draw it from under your shirt, so you have to be prepared to do that. Wouldn't work with a dress, but that's another option. I've tried it out. It wasn't for me, but some people might really like that.
Fanny packs are another type of, I'm not certain if that's considered off the body or on the body.
Yeah, it's on the body. And I was going to mention fanny packs, but I was thinking about the little girl in the cute little outfit, and she probably wouldn't want a fanny pack on. That's why I didn't mention that. But fanny packs are an excellent option if you have it, you know, on and buckled. You have to have a dedicated holster fanny pack, not just any fanny pack. And you need to practice drawing from it so you're not crossing your other hand. Most of them have a rip cord that you rip with one hand and pull the gun out with another. But it is something you need to practice to draw with that, definitely, to get it out quickly. But then again, when they're wearing a cute little outfit, they probably don't want a fanny pack on. And those things can twist around. It might be, you know, when you're walking, who knows where they're going to end up. It might be right in front. It might be on the side. It might be in the back. So it's not the best way, but it is a way. I think the best way is somewhere on your hip or somewhere on your body, inside or outside the waistband.
What do you think about appendix carry?
I have seen it done well, and I've seen it done poorly. It's not for me. I don't have a lot of experience with it because it's not comfortable there for me. I think it pokes me when I sit down.
Okay.
But that's another thing. You really have to practice drawing from that position if that's how you're going to carry.
Yeah, because some of the women that I've spoken with don't like the hip carry because of the way that women's hips are. It's
right.
Difficult to conceal. It sticks out quite a bit. And so they like to carry, and it's called an appendix carry because it kind of rests close and kind of in the concave portion right above where your appendix is on your right side. and it kind of fits in that little niche right there inside the waistband. And with a smaller firearm, it can be nicely concealed there, especially, and then you put on a jacket or a coat over the top of it. But I've had
I do know women.
I'm sorry.
See, I know women who carry that way. But again, you have to practice. You have to practice clearing your clothing and drawing. That way is not for me. So I tried it. I said, oh, I don't like this. And that was it. Another way to carry is with a belly band. Again, you need a small gun to conceal it. And this band goes around your waist. It's elastic. And it has a little area sewn in for a holster. And you can move that around your body wherever it's comfortable. It could be hip carry. It could be appendix. It could be behind the hip. You can just kind of twist it around to find that, you know, that perfect spot.
So it's kind of like a girdle.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, they even have those for men as well.
They do. They're not just for women. They're for anybody. And I used to carry my little car in one like that, and it was a PM9, and it was quite comfortable. So that's another option.
All right. Now, the last thing I'd like to talk about is competition. Just trying to set up this interview, a couple of times I sent you text messages. You're like, oh, I'm in a competition right now. Can I get back in a couple of days?
Yeah.
I don't think, what happened, 2 or 3 times?
Yes, it did. It did. I was at the World Shoot down in Frostproof, Florida one time. I was at a Glock match. I was at a class. So competition, you know, IDPA is what I do primarily. And that's an International Defensive Pistol Association. And it kind of sets up scenarios like you might find in the real world, like the one you saw with me sitting with you in the airplane seats with the two doors. And then you have to go out there and solve the problem. So you got your gun, the buzzer beeps, you go out there, you shoot the prescribed targets, you finish, they take an aggregate of your score and how many points you have, and that's the total.
So it's
that
it's
was
like,
totally lame. Sorry.
It's all right. No, it's a combination of time and accuracy. Is that right?
Time and accuracy. Yes, you said it better than I can. I'm a little disorganized today, trying to pack to get ready to go to a 2-week trip to Arizona.
For another series of training and things like
yes.
that.
Yes.
What I like about competition is that it adds another element. It introduces you to a very open and welcoming culture, and it's other people,
yes.
and the competition, there's a lot of camaraderie, a lot of people that share. You get together and you train together, and you trade ideas, and you meet new people, and now with IDPA, and you also do GSSF. It's not straight range shooting. It's not square range shooting where you just, you know, put holes in a target. It's not purely based on accuracy. You're moving and shooting. So it's a more realistic self-defense type. So it's really good practice for that. It's so much fun.
Right. You're moving and shooting, and the targets are moving. They're not shooting back, but they're moving. And you get to try different things that you wouldn't normally try in a square range. You might have to shoot around a wall. You might have to shoot around the wall left-handed. You might have to shoot under a car. We've done that. We've shot over the hood of an ambulance. You know, all these different things around a car, through the car windows, in the car. You know, you don't know how loud your gun is. So you shoot it in a car, and that's really loud. So it gives you the opportunity to try things that you probably, you know, haven't tried before. It challenges you, and it gets you to think about things. Well, what would happen in the real world if this happened? What would I do? And if you're shooting something like this, then, you know, you've already experienced a little bit. It kind of gives you a little experience, so it's not brand new if you're in that situation. And you got also have the pressure of the buzzer, you know, and you know the timer's running, and you know that all comes together and gets your adrenaline rushing. You know, by no means is it real-world training. It is a game, but it does challenge you to do different types of shooting and think through problems. So I think it's very advantageous for the shooter.
And you are firing live ammo, and it is a real gun. This is not paintball.
No, it is not paintball.
It's not paintball. It's not Nerf gun. It's not air pistol. These are your firearms and real cartridges and bullets going downrange. It's the type of stuff that you see in movies that you've always wanted to do, and going to the competition and joining clubs allows you to do that, because you can do things in these competitions and in these clubs on the private ranges that you could never do on a square range. I mean, so many ranges don't let you draw from holster.
Right, you know, that's true. I've run into that.
The only place that I know of here in my area that you can do draw from holster is if you rent a private range, which is so hard to do because you have to put your order in. You have to be an NRI certified instructor, and you have to be insured. And then it takes, there's an 8-month waiting list. So it was extremely hard to train. So the only training that I really get from drawing is with my airsoft gun, which is an exact replica, functioning with reciprocating slide and everything in my backyard, or dry firing. Mm-hmm. So I don't get very much draw with live ammo.
Yeah, but shooting these matches, you get to draw almost every stage. You're drawing from the holster. Sometimes you're drawing from a box, depending on what scenario they've set up. You know, you might pretend like you're a store owner and you pull the gun from the box under the counter. You know, things that you would never try, you know, any other way.
Yeah, it's a blast. It's a lot of fun.
It is a blast.
So I highly recommend people investigate it. Men, women. The other thing, that's what I was thinking.
Yes.
There are classes and classifications. So somebody who's brand new, who's never competed before, especially and women have their own categories. So somebody who's just starting, has been shooting for a couple of months, is not going to be put in the same category as, say, an expert like Gail Pepin.
No, there are different categories. And when you first start, you know, you'll be in the novice category. You don't have to be categorized to begin with. You'd be a novice and you just shoot your gun. After you get a little experience, I think after the first novice match, they want you to classify. And there's a set course of fire that everybody takes to put them in their classification. And it's classified by what kind of gun you have and how well you shoot it. And it's also a mixture of time and score. So they'll classify you like that.
So based on skill, they'll put you into a category.
Based on skill.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, don't worry about looking stupid or looking wrong, because, yes, there are going to be national champions there, but they're going to help you, if anything. The gun community is one of the most open and receptive communities I've ever come across.
Oh, that's true. You know, everybody is always so nice. You know, you very, very rarely run into somebody who's not going to be very pleasant and very helpful. And if you're afraid to go and shoot that first match, you know, don't be. You're not going out there to win. You're going out there to get some experience. And if you go out there with the attitude that I just want to shoot this and see what it's about and see what I learn, you'll get a whole lot more out of it if you go there and say, well, you know, I'm going to win, you know, because you want to learn. At some point, you might start winning, but in the beginning, you're just going to want to learn and challenge yourself. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you're going to don't shoot the scenario so fast that you're going to have a poor score. Take your time, shoot it slow, see what it's all about, and learn from there. Just watch yourself improve.
Yeah, sound advice. So before we close, let's talk a bit about the differences between the different organizations. So, you know, like, what is the difference between IDPA and GSSF? How are they different?
IDPA has matches all over the country. They're going to have a match probably every weekend. They're run by local clubs, and most local clubs will have at least one day a month. You can get training there, get all the experience for like $15 to $20. And that's all it takes to go to a club match. GSSF, on the other hand, is run by Glock. Glock hosts it. Glock takes it from town to town. They're all over the country also. And there's a fixed scenario, whereas IDPA can be any kind of scenario. GSSF has their own fixed scenarios, which you can get in their GSSF annual. So you go there, you know what you're going to shoot. There's three basic three basic scenarios that you know you're going to shoot, and it's going to be the same everywhere you go. So it's consistency. You can see how you improve from match to match, get worse or get better. You can compare yourself to other shooters. You know, if Joe in Washington State shot such and such a score, a 62 score, and you're in Florida and you get a 62 score, you know you shot the same course. You can compare your scores like that. So it's a little bit different. It's very challenging. The scores are fast. The shooting is very fast in GSSF. But I want to take back to the whole women and shooting thing, kind of tie the whole thing together with what we started out talking about, what we're ending up talking about. This year they had the first annual, I hope, all-female GSSF match. And that was held, at my friend Lisa Marie Judy's range in South Carolina. So it was only open to women, and you would be surprised at the women that showed up there and how many women said to me, if this wasn't an all-female match, I wouldn't have tried it. It was amazing. There were so many women there, and they were so helpful to each other. There was a lot of juniors there, young girl shooters, 14, 15, 16 years old, with their moms, some with their dads. Some brought their dads to carry the ammo, fill their magazines for them. It was a great time. There was even the local sheriff's department even bought clock memberships for all their female officers and paid for their entry fees for the match.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
That was very nice. That was great. And it was so much fun, just women helping each other and supporting each other in the shooting sports. And it really got a lot of women over that hump of shooting your first match. Because once you shoot your first match, you're going to be hooked. But it's kind of hard and kind of intimidating to go that first one. So hopefully she'll have it again next year. That's in Reevesville, South Carolina. You can watch on the website. It's GSSFonline.com, I believe, for the Glock Shooting Sports Foundation.
All right. Fantastic. Well, Gail, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate you sharing your knowledge and experience with firearms for women specifically.
Well, thanks, Alex. I know there's a lot of other things we haven't touched on yet. We can do that in the future, I hope.
Yeah, your time's a little short, but we'll definitely have you back on. So if people want to contact you and have follow-up questions, what would be the best way to do that?
Oh, the best way. Send me a text message. At least I answer those. If you go,
we're not going to get out your cell number.
Thank you. If you go to proarmspodcast.com, or they can email me at gail@proarmsinc.com. I'll be happy to answer any questions they may have. Also, I always check at least once a week, hopefully more often, the Gun Rights Radio Network forums. And in the pro-arms section, that's the one I always check. If they want to ask a question, they can go there. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are on the forum.
Yeah, I've got quite a few. But actually, I get most of my traffic to the Facebook fan page.
Oh, okay.
I get about, I don't know, 7 or 8 times more traffic on that page than I do the forums on GRRN.
Do you really?
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, we don't have a Facebook fan page. I've resisted that. I'm on Facebook. That's another way they can get in contact with me on Facebook. And they send me push notifications to my phone, so I kind of have to see it. But we haven't explored making a group on Facebook. I don't think I want to.
It's not that bad.
Oh, it's one more thing to check. And GRN has a page, so that's good enough for me.
Yeah, and the Pro Arms forums is one of the most active on GRN. So it's a good resource.
And it's a friendly forum.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I go there for questions and get amazing answers from people from all different experience levels and even employment, from professional bodyguards to law enforcement to all sorts of things.
Yeah, we have a nice mix of people on there, and it's a pretty nice environment. If you've been at any of the other gun forums there, some people are not always as pleasant as you'd like them to be.
Yeah.
On ours, they are.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's very pleasant. There's a distinct lack of ego. And any hate or trolling is squashed. So it's a very nice environment to share in.
So find me there. Find Alex there.
Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely. And Gail's podcast is the Pro Arms podcast. And
that's
I recommend check it out. It's good.
And
good
my
stuff.
My title is Predator.
Predator?
Predator. That's producer editor.
Ah, okay. I just didn't know if it's because you actually put a bayonet on one of your Glocks, I think.
Well, sometimes.
Yes.
Sometimes.
When the command to affix bayonets comes out, Gail whoops out her pistol and affixes the bayonet to her pistol.
Makes it hard to reholster, though.
There are pictures of that floating around somewhere, I believe, as well.
I think there are. I think there are.
All right. Well, thanks again, Gail, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, Alex. Take care.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro Second Amendment, pro gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Welcome back. Since this week's show was an interview, there is no summary. And thanks again to Gail for coming on the show. She's a fantastic person, and I love chatting with her. That will do it for this week. And as always, you can follow my daily tips on Twitter and Facebook. On Twitter, I'm Practical Def, and Facebook is Practical Defense. I also invite you to check out my book on practical home security. It is currently available in Amazon Kindle and Barnes & Noble Nook editions. The iTunes iBookstore and Dead Tree Print versions are on their way. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddix.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe.
Hey everybody, we are
Lady Antebellum.
Before every show, we practice. Gotta be prepared.
Exactly, and the American Red Cross wants us to be prepared too. Prepared for disaster.
Just take 3 steps to be Red Cross ready. Create a disaster supplies kit with water, food, and a first aid kit. Make a family communication plan and listen to local radio and TV reports to stay informed.
It's that simple. To learn more, visit redcross.org or contact your local Red Cross chapter today. Thank you so much.
Practical Defense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexaddix.com. That's podcast@alexaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexaddix.com.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.